Part 2. In this part, you will hear three short talks. After each talk, you will hear six questions about it. Before each talk begins, you will have time to preview the questions that are printed in the test booklet. You will hear each talk and the questions once. If you want to, you may take notes in your booklet as you listen. Mark your answers on the separate answer sheet, not in the test booklet. You should mark A, B, C, or D. Do you have any questions? Now you will hear the first talk. Look at the questions. Listen to a talk on cryptography.
Welcome to my presentation on cryptography. I just want to start by giving you all an introduction to the history and development of this subject, as this talk will be followed by our main seminar on the future of digital security. Now, cryptography, as its Greek meaning hidden and writing indicates, is the study of how information can be changed into a form that is unreadable unless you have the code or device used in its encryption. Interestingly, cryptology is not a new thing. In fact, such forms of cryptography were widespread in many ancient civilizations from Europe and the Middle East to India. Notable exceptions are the famous Mongolian Genghis Khan and the early Chinese, who seem never to have used any cryptographic techniques. Julius Caesar was known to use a system in which the letters of the alphabet were all moved forward three places. As you can see here, the letter A would be symbolized by the letter C. Not too difficult to solve, right? This is an example of why classical ciphers were decoded easily, a big limitation. Bringing things up to more recent times, the invention of the telegraph in 1844 and the radio in 1895 meant that transmissions were no longer physically secure and could be intercepted almost at will. This meant nations gave cryptography a lot of attention in the World Wars and Cold War of the 20th century. In fact, efforts to decode enemy messages in World War II led the British government to develop the world's first computer at a secret intelligence base. Nowadays, it goes without saying that technological advances have resulted in an increase in the importance and use of cryptography. It now does more than just hide national secrets, as indicated by its use in digital signatures and digital finance. The digital world of computers and electronics has led to extremely complex ciphers being developed. Today, our power systems, transport networks, as well as ordinary businesses must take precautions, or the consequences could be disastrous. Of course, cryptography is now involved in mainstream technology, on which most people rely. For example, most consumers make use of cryptography on a daily basis when entering a password to use the internet or an ATM. So, to wrap things up, I'd like to say that as so many aspects of our daily lives depend on digital technology, we must be aware of the significance of digital security.
Number 21. What is the purpose of the talk? Number 22. According to the speakers, in which ancient civilization was classical cryptography not likely to be found? Number 23. What limitation of classical ciphers does the speaker mention? Number 24. Why does the speaker say cryptography needed to become more complex in the 19th century? Number 25. How does the speaker say cryptography has changed in recent years? Number 26. Why does the speaker say encryption is important for society? Now you will hear the second talk. Look at the questions. Listen to a talk at an arts event.
Thank you all for coming today. I'm very glad to see so many people here, and I hope that after my talk, you will be keen to put your hands in your pockets and sponsor some arts projects that I believe will make a difference to some of the most underprivileged areas in the country. The arts can inspire economic regeneration, but only if we are willing to provide financial support. I would like to highlight the case of the town of Margate on the Kent coast in England. Its picturesque landscape famously inspired the great landscape artist Turner. He had been to school in the town and would often visit to see friends and escape from the hustle and bustle of London. However, more than anything, he desired to capture the sea, skies, and scenery of the surrounding area. You see, it was the expansion of the railway network that opened up the coast to large numbers of visitors in the mid-19th century. Thousands of visitors would flock to the sandy beaches. Being close to London, Margate especially prospered. However, by the end of the 1960s and into the 1970s, cheap air travel had lured holidaymakers to the warmth of the Mediterranean. More significantly, vacation packages were within the budget of most ordinary people. That meant Margate, like other seaside resorts, fell into sharp decline. Tracy Emin, one of Britain's most well-known modern artists, grew up in Margate in the 1970s and described the town as a place with few opportunities for the young. Despite that, Emin never wavered in her support for her hometown. So when the local government suggested a new scheme for the regeneration of the town based on the arts, she was an enthusiastic supporter. A plan was put forward to build a museum named after the great Turner, who had been so inspired by the region. However, the scheme met a lot of opposition and even ridicule. It seemed strange that a modern art museum would be located in a small town. London had always been the heart of the art scene in the UK. Nevertheless, the brand new Turner Contemporary opened its doors in 2011 and received thousands of visitors. Since then, the economy has picked up and the town has changed visibly. The theme park has reopened, the old town has filled up with stylish cafes, restaurants, and vintage shops, and across the town, galleries and studios have opened. The success story of Margate is something we should bear in mind when it comes to supporting arts projects.
Number 27. What is the speaker's main purpose? Number 28. What does the speaker say was the main reason Turner visited Margate? Number 29. What does the speaker say enabled mass tourism in Margate? Number 30. What does the speaker say enabled thousands of tourists to head to the Mediterranean? Number 31. Why does the speaker say some people disagreed with the plans for the new museum? Number 32. What does the speaker imply about the town today? Now you will hear the third talk. Look at the questions. Listen to a talk on art theft.
Today, I'd like to talk about theft in the art world. Now, art theft is usually carried out in order to resell a work of art. However, this can be quite difficult for the thief because the ownership of well-known works of art can be easily established, and any potential buyers are often hard to find. Let's talk about what options the thief has. Auction houses demand proof of art ownership before auctioning it, so that's no good. This leads us to a common practice called theft for hire, in which a buyer has already been found before the actual theft. Since such works can't be displayed publicly, it can only be assumed that some buyers may enjoy possessing famous art secretly. The most famous art theft occurred in 1911, when the Mona Lisa was stolen from the Louvre. Luckily, it was recovered 2 years later, which was fortunate as war would break out in 1914, meaning such matters would not have been a priority. In another famous incident, two panels of the 15th century Ghent altarpiece, painted by the brothers Jan and Hubert van Eyck, were stolen in 1934. Only one was recovered shortly after the theft. The other one has never been recovered, and probably never will be, because the thief died before revealing where the painting was hidden. More recently, the works of Edvard Munch have attracted the attention of art thieves. In 1994, Munch's The Scream was stolen from the National Gallery in Oslo, Norway, but was recovered later in the year. In August 2004, another original of The Scream, Munch painted several versions of it, together with his Madonna, were stolen. This time, the thieves took the paintings in a daring raid at gunpoint and during opening hours. In March 2005, three more Munch paintings were stolen from a hotel in Norway, but were recovered the next day. So how is this ever-increasing problem being dealt with? Through the National Stolen Art File, otherwise known as the NSAF. The NSAF is a computerized index of stolen art. The primary goal of the NSAF is to assist investigators in art theft cases and to function as a database, providing investigators with information concerning art theft. Now let's go on.
Number 33. Why does the speaker say it is difficult to sell stolen art? Number 34. What does the speaker mean by theft for hire? Number 35. When does the speaker say the Mona Lisa was recovered? Number 36. Why does the speaker say a stolen section of the Ghent altarpiece was not found? Number 37. Why does the speaker mention Edvard Munch? Number 38. What does the speaker say the NSAF is? End of part 2.